historically splendid abodes, the official podcast of Toronto Philippe. Exploring, if you will, practical philosophy, from science and the workings of the mind to spirituality, esotericism, and magic. Stooping down, dipping my wings, I came into the darkly splendid abodes. Karma is commonly described as the results of one's actions in one form or another, and often gets thought of as a cosmic justice system. But how is it seen from a thelemic perspective? And how can the concept inform one's pursuit to know and to do the true will? This workshop explores how one can know who they are, and how to decide one's future.
Okay, we'll begin. First and foremost, do what thou wilt, shall be the whole of the law.
Love is law, love under will.
Thank you everyone for joining the latest lecture given by Toronto Thelema. For those of you who don't know, Toronto Thelema is a grassroots community organization hosting talks like this, monthly socials, and quarterly equinox and solstice ceremonies open to the public for those interested in Thelema and naturally living in Toronto. Today, we're going to discuss karma in its traditional sense and how that relates to Thelema, with particular reference to the concept of the true will. We'll then later look into how karma plays a role in the higher levels of Thelemic initiation and regular magical practice. I'll briefly introduce karma, ideally try and clear up some common misconceptions before moving into breaking down, from a traditional perspective, how karma is viewed, and I'll be largely drawing upon the material of Swami Vivekananda for that. Covering traditional karma, I'll then move on to karma in Thelema, and I'll look at it through three main lenses, which is how it relates to the true will, how it relates to ritual magic, and how it relates, as I mentioned, to some of those higher level initiations and the so-called adept grades of the Thelemic order, the AA. I'll briefly touch upon some pitfalls or common mistakes people may have when approaching karma or considering karma in light of what we've talked about. And then I'll ideally summarize and give you some takeaways. So to reiterate why we're giving this talk, it's to bridge the gap between traditional ideas of karma and how it's perceived by modern Thelema, and really how it's integrated into modern Thelema. Again, also to clear up the common misconceptions about karma. In pop culture, we usually associate karma with this cosmic reward system, that if we do good things, we're gonna get rewarded in this life or the next, maybe, or if we do bad things, we're gonna get punished for it. But at its root, as we'll see in the next slide, karma is actually something incredibly impersonal in comparison to this idea of cosmic judgment. And finally, we're also here to talk about how karma is used towards mystical attainment, which in theory, if we're interested in Thelema, ultimately these are our goals. We want magical practice and mystical attainment. Beginning with our friend Vivekananda here, and drawing upon his book, Karma Yoga, one of four excellent texts from him on the various types of yoga, and it's quite short, it's like 93 pages. Vivekananda tells us that karma fundamentally is just cause and effect. Really it is, and it quite literally means action. It's not about punishment reward, as we've mentioned, but simply that certain effects will flow from certain causes. And in fact, the idea of karma does not separate cause and effect, but actually identifies the two with each other. There is no cause without its effect, or vice versa. A lot of what Vivekananda talks about in his text, which is actually adapted from a lecture for the record, is the way that our actions, our karma, influence our character, and in turn the way our character goes on to influence karma, our actions, I should say. that when we live a certain way, when we do certain things, internally, it will affect who we are, and of course, there will be external actions as well. And so when we live along certain lines, our actions create tendency in ourselves and in the world, and these tendencies go on to influence us back. One of the things that we try and take away from the traditional perspective on karma is this idea of responsibility. Now, we know it's not punishment and reward, but when we understand, quite obviously, which I think all of us understand, that our actions have consequences, we are responsible for all those consequences. And the analysis into one's own karma, which is to say the things that we do, the things that have been done to us as well, we can judge where we would like to end up, particularly with reference to magical practice, mystical attainment, or just simply being a better person. Karma in and of itself is not a value judgment. Vivekananda speaks quite lengthily about good karma and bad karma, but from his perspective, the good karma is not simply doing a nice thing for somebody. And in fact, the point from his perspective of doing good things which are good is not even for the sake of benefiting others, but ultimately to contribute to our own attainment, to help us approach liberation. And the way by which we do that, from his perspective, is working for work's sake. It is working for its own sake, and thus the quote, as we'll see, that I placed at the beginning of this slide, for pure will and assuaged of purpose, without delivered from lust of result, is in every way perfect. That we're going to see a consistent theme of working for its own sake, and that is going to be critical in how we connect the traditional views on karma into thelema and thelemic practice. The good karma, from Vivekananda's perspective, is that which brings us towards non-attachment, because starting off as a regular person, even if we know in the ideals we don't attach to our work, because once we become free of attachments, we may then liberate. But obviously, when we start out, we probably have a lot of attachments. So the good karma is that which gives us a tendency towards working without attachment, which implies certain types of actions, typically selfless actions, without hoping for some reward, some result, are going to bring us towards non-attachment and liberation, and therefore those are good. But in the same perspective, I can do a very good thing for somebody, but if I myself have attachments, but more to the point, if I have some desire for results, to be rewarded, to be lauded for it, then that in and of itself is not actually bringing me closer towards the goal, towards liberation, and attainment. And that's the closest thing to a morality from Vivekananda's perspective that we arrive at with karma, because he goes out of his way to say that the morally good actions in this society will differ greatly to those from another. The rules and the ways in which we have to be in certain places and certain times will differ, and yet it is the things which lead us to non-attachment and lead us to liberation that we may say those are the good karma. And shifting now to thelema, for those who may not be aware, or even just as a reminder, one of the central ideas of thelema is what's known as the true will. That comes from Crowley's Book of the Law, and is the heart of what we would like to do as thelemites. The idea of this true will is the most natural expression of our individuality, something beyond the concepts that we may have of, I am this person, I work at this job, maybe I'm a father, a child, a friend, whatever else it may be. In thelema, we say there is something more innate, more fundamental to who we are and to how we should be in this world. And some of the common ways people can think about this upon hearing it is, oh, well, I want to be a rock star. I want to be a movie star or whatever. I want to be really rich. And the nuance of true will is, of course, first of all, not simply what you would like to have happen, but rather than specific things that you must accomplish, for the most part, the true will is a way for you to be in every situation. And this links back to the karma because it is the way for you to act in any given situation. And so the objectives within thelemic practice, thelemic initiation, is to discover that thing or uncover it. Because then you have the way, you have that task to do happily and without working and without desire, without lust of result, because you know why you're here and what you're here for. Karma yoga bridges this idea, or really the true will bridges karma yoga to thelema, because it gives us that objective. Similarly, before one is, let's say, non-attached in the world, before one knows their true will, we can approximate our true will as helping us uncover it, doing the work necessary to discover who we are and why we're here. From the perspective of the karma yogi, as Vivekananda would call it then, the thelemic karma yogi is the one doing actions to bring themselves towards initiation, to bring themselves towards attaining to the true will. Following that knowledge, all you have to do then is do your true will. There's always more work to do, of course, and this goes back to Vivekananda's idea, work for work's sake. True will, pure will, and assuaged of purpose, delivered from the lust of result. You're working because that is what you are here for. Every second, until the day we die, we'll be doing work. We will be doing actions which impact ourselves and impact others. And from the thelemic perspective, the most right thing to be doing, the most right way to be, is in accordance with the true will. And so first we work to uncover that thing, and that in a sense is our good karma. And then we work to simply do it and be the way we have to be and fill our role in the world. And ideally and eventually do that without attachment, and then in fact liberate by virtue of having done our true will without attachment. And I have this point at the very bottom of the slide, which is that to say after you know your true will that you're still bringing in these karmic ideas, this kind of karmic morality, is a moot point, because upon its discovery there is no other way for you to be. When we think about true will, of course, it's an idea that sounds very nice. One can be very reasonably skeptical that there is this innate, true way that we should be that is deeper than anything else. For me, I got into thelema because I felt very strongly about some of these ideas and I saw them reflected in the tradition. But anyone would be perfectly reasonable to be skeptical. What thelema offers, and with particular reference to karma, which is paying attention to the causes and effects, we say, this thing is real, this true will, here are ways you can do it. So for one that doesn't know, it may be enough to suspend your own disbelief until you can get there. And once you get there, you'll discover for yourself if it's there or not, and more to the point, if it is real, and you have discovered who and what you are, why you're here and how you should be, there'll be no other choice. And then you don't really have to worry about, am I doing the right karma or not? Because you have that answer, I am doing the true will. Now, Vivekananda, of course, does not talk about true will, doesn't talk about Crowley or thelema. Instead, he pitches it that while we're struggling to get to the point of non-attachment, because we're all people and presumably it takes practice to not attach to your work, Vivekananda suggests we dedicate all of our work to God. We say, I'm going to do these things not for result, but in, you know, the honor of God, love of God, we could even say love of the world, or even just because it's right. In thelema, we have a similar, and frankly the same answer, but from a slightly different perspective, which again is that true will. That is the duty, if we either suspend our disbelief enough to go and try and find out if that thing is really there inside of us, or if we've discovered it already, and then there is no question. Thelema provides a framework for understanding what the right karma is in a given situation and what to work to get to that point of understanding. And it's foundational because of that quote from the start of the slide, pure will and assuaged of purpose from the Book of the Law, chapter 1, 44. Crowley says it in our foundational texts. Delivered from the lust of result is in every way perfect, because that is all we are here to do. There is nothing more important for any given one of us to uncover the true will, assuming that the true will exists. I felt strongly that something like that existed, and I went searching. And eventually I found what I was looking for. And so I cannot imagine any other way to live. And in the process of my searching, I thought, well, if there's a way for me to be in this world more natural than anything else, what on earth could I be doing other than pursuing that thing? And I've spoken about most of these points already on the last slide, but to bring back this idea of non-attachment, working towards non-attachment, when I say that when you're doing your true will, or when you know it, you have no choice but to do it, thou hast no right but to do thine own true will, non-attachment flows necessarily because it is a type of restriction on you, but it's a restriction which is the only way for you to be. And I'm really trying to emphasize this point because this is how we build successively towards liberation. Because uncovering the true will is not liberation, not necessarily, but it's the means by which we keep doing our karma, and we probably are bringing the other yogas and all these practices to get to that point of the highest attainments. And as I've said, and I'll say it one last time before moving on, you get to the point, or you can get to the point, where no other work is possible but the true will. Because it is not, I need to go be a rock star, or I need to do this or that, necessarily. It is the way for you to be in any given situation. And the work involved in getting to the point of uncovering your true will is the work to prepare yourself to undertake it as perfectly as you can. And of course, that's a long process, and it continues to be a process after uncovery, but that is the objective, perfect work, which is, in fact, perfect karma. From a different perspective, shifting from the point of attainment to practical magical mechanics, Crowley's wonderful definition for magic is simply the science and art of causing change in conformity with will. That's an incredibly broad statement. In fact, every action, which we remember is karma, is a form of magic, isn't it? I know the science and art of lifting this up. I know the science and art of this or that, of accomplishing certain goals. And all of these things are karma. When we perform a ritual, when we develop a ritual, we are simply assessing what actions, what causes need to be in place to achieve certain effects. In a ritual, that may be incense, the tools you use, the color candles you use, the fancy magical words that you use. All these are the karma that we use to achieve whatever the objective is of that ritual. Now, the magical part is that we say we can do things in a ritual to accomplish things outside of the temple space. That's maybe the crazy part, and that's the thing for anyone to go and discover for their own, if that is possible. But magic says, in fact, we can do certain actions and expect certain outcomes to come from it. This is the core of Crowley's scientific illuminism, that we use the method of science, we assess, and are constantly judging our actions and the outcomes to achieve, ideally, the aims of religion, liberation, union with God, whatever you would like to call that. And if we view ritual, and any type of magic really, as a deliberate karma, what logically flows is this idea of harmony that Crowley talks about in Magic and Theory and Practice, which is that when we're designing a ritual, in fact, magic is not so arbitrary. There is subjectivity, and there's often an art to designing ritual and to practicing, but we say certain outcomes, certain ingredients will yield certain results. And so we may actually find that using these colors, using these words and these incenses and these tools produces a better result. Again, that's the science part that is up to all of you to practice and discover, but it fits perfectly and naturally with the ideas of karma, because we are doing the karma of the ritual to achieve the objective that we want to. And in order to do ritual without the lust of result, without attaching, one of the perspectives I like to take is to not differentiate between the ritual and the outcome. that by doing the ritual, that is the outcome. Now, of course, practice and testing will show if that's the case for you or always the case. But we can apply the same type of science even when we fail, because we can go back and ask, what went wrong? Was something out of harmony? Were there other forces getting in the way? Was I getting in the way? And the experimentation is, again, there for you to discover and find for yourself. And all we say is, these things are in fact possible, and you can apply rigorous methods to try it and test it for yourself. Shifting now to a less discussed component of karma is in some of the higher initiations of Crowley's order, the AA. Karma features very heavily in what they call the adept grades. The adept grades are the point at which one has discovered their true will, that big thing I was talking about. So you've accomplished that. You've hit the first major stepping stone to knowing yourself, and in fact, you now know yourself, or part of yourself, and you know who you are and why you're here. We call that person an adept. The three grades at which one is called an adept are sometimes called the ethical triad. And this is a slightly different type of ethic, or ethics, than we'd usually associate. Usually when we think of ethics, I think, you know, not stealing people's money at work, or whatever it may be, treating people ethically. And the definition is actually not so different, but what the adept does, particularly with reference to the true will, is build a set of ethics around their way of life. They are building the ethics to do the things which produce good karma, that lead to non-attachment, that lead to liberation, and they're doing practices to cut out the things which get in the way in order to approach that idea of perfect action. And how do they do that? By looking at themselves. We'll see in two examples of two of the grades the ways in which the adept or any individual may assess themselves and assess the world to track that karma, to look at the causes and effects, and then, of course, to track the karma to get to the objective of liberation. What causes do I need? What actions must I take to continue on this path, to become non-attached, and then to liberate? With that also comes mastery of practical magic, because aside from these lofty ideas, which are the right goals, the best goals, which is to attain and liberate and all these nice things, if you can track an objective like that, then you can similarly, fairly easily, accomplish more or less anything you would like to with magic. Maybe still with experimentation. There are limits, and we're all human. But all of the things we learned about ritual magic just a moment ago are exemplified and ultimately mastered within the adept period. The second of the three adept grades, I skipped the first, is called Adeptus Major, the major adept. Among the major adept's tasks is to obtain a general mastery of practical magic. And we say, although without comprehension, because practically we know I can use these ingredients to bake this cake, so to speak, but they may not understand necessarily how it all works, how it all connects, and more to the point, these are lesser operations of magic, which is to say that they're not that great goal of liberation. These are the mundane magical things that we do on the daily. And the truth is, I don't have the quote here, but Crowley in some of his texts warns the Adeptus Majors that though they have mastered magic, or though they're at the pinnacle of their own magical power up until that point, they may still actually not know what the right thing is with respect to others. He gives a wonderful example of an Adeptus Major wanting to go and heal someone who he knows is sick. And we would think, again, isn't that great karma? You're doing something selfless. And on its face, it is. It is a great thing to want for somebody. But what the Adeptus Major doesn't understand, so Crowley says, compared to the next grade, is that it may not be their right, your right, to interfere and heal someone. Perhaps their karma has led them to that for some reason, and there is something for them to initiate through. Unfortunate and difficult, but the true will is yours to do for yourself, and each and every other person has the same obligation to uncover their own and to deal with their own karma so that they may too liberate. from that perspective, you're doing no one a favor by getting in the way of that process. Another important component of the Adeptus Major grade with respect to karma is the idea of the wheel, one of the tarot cards. The Adeptus Major comprehends and knows how to use the revolutions of the wheel. In Hindu theology, these are the three gunas, tamas, rajas, and sattva. Tamas is the inertia that we all face. Rajas is our action, our fiery interest, which can turn into obsession if too much, but can also be the way in which we get work. And then sattva, the final one, is the equilibrium of the two. It is steady work, calm work, serene work, and balance. Both Crowley, suggested by the wheel, and Vivekananda agree that all of these things are constantly in flux in ourselves and in others. Some rule us more so. Some of us lean towards inertia, depression. Others lean towards perhaps obsession, work, and effort. And maybe there are some people so blessed that they're always in sattva and they're always in equilibrium. And I'd like to meet some of them. But all these revolve, so to speak. They change. We each have all of them present in every situation. Any group also has a present. So how does the Adeptus Major, or how can any of us contemplate the gunas? In ourselves, maybe it's obvious. Today I'm feeling down, I'm tired, I don't want to leave the house. The law of tamas. We might choose to introduce some rajas into our own lives to say, what can stir me right now? Although it's important to remember, because all these three have a place. There is a time and a place for you to be in that tamasic state, for you to be sleeping and tired. If you want to do good work tomorrow, you're going to go to sleep today to get rest. If you want to have equilibrium, you need to do enough work to put everything in its place. With external things, with groups, or even broader aspects of our lives, it may be difficult, but you can apply the same principles to your career. Am I in that rajas state of my career? Am I working hard, focused, or am I feeling a little lazy? Or am I feeling stuck, worse off? Or perhaps, the better of the two, maybe after you put in all that work to change and to get to a place, maybe you're just there to enjoy it and steadily work in sattva. We can apply all this analysis to any component of our lives, to our relationships with others, group settings. But ultimately, we tie these ideas back to karma, to the true will and our objective, which the obligation of every single person is, in fact, to discover their true will and then to perform it. And so we can think about how the gunas are affecting our own performance or our own journey to getting to it. And if we are ruled by them, if I'm stuck in tamas and I can't get out, or if I'm stuck in rajas and I'm obsessed with something and I can't break out of it, by this stage, one masters these things, and in fact, I should say, it is the task of this grade to master it. And I show you these grades not to say, here's this thing where, you know, you have to work a bunch of years to get here. All these principles apply to each and every one of us. We can already begin doing this analysis, and you don't necessarily need a big organization or a set of initiations to start doing this work, and certainly not to liberate. Each and every one of us has the power and the right and the obligation to uncover our true will, whether we do it with an order, with a group, whether we even call it Thelema. If you search far enough, it will be there, and it will tell you what you have to do, and it will lead you to the ultimate goal of liberation. Moving on, maybe to something a bit more tantalizing. The following grade, so-called Adeptus Exemptus, or the Exempt Adept, one of their practices is a book called Liber Thesarb. This is one of Crowley's texts. Liber just means book. And that is Crowley's past life regression. Vivekananda similarly discusses past lives. He concludes that there must be past lives to explain karma that cannot be explained by our current incarnations. I leave it up to you to explore past lives on your own, to explore your karma on your own, and answer whether or not just this life is enough to explain who you are and where you are. But at this stage in one's career, in the context of AA, one is bidden to do this, and they're warned that they should understand exactly who they are and where they came from through many past lives, because the step after this is basically attempting to liberate. And you may find that if you have not sufficiently uncovered the parts of yourself or not sufficiently understood, and these are Crowley's warnings for the record, if you have not understood the causes and effects of your life and of all the lives that have brought you to the point where you're saying, I'm going to take the leap into what we call the abyss, but into attempting basically to liberate, then you don't necessarily know where your karma is going to shoot you. And that's why Crowley warns, we decide upon the critical adventure of our order. You can't remain in this grade, the exempt adept, because the karma of working these grades, the karma of any of us striving for self-knowledge, striving for liberation, is pushing us towards that point of liberation. And with enough effort and work, we get to the point where we don't just get to stay anymore. Eventually, every one of us in this life or the next will have to make that leap. And certainly if we are here already talking about these things, attempting these things, then we're already pushing in that direction. And so he outlines the importance of doing this work, of understanding as far back as you can, of this life at least, and as well as of previous lives, to know how you got here, and to know that if you make that leap into what we call the abyss, where is it going to lead me? Have I dealt with every part of myself sufficiently that I'm not going to get trapped in this space? Do I know how to identify what's going on around me? Because within the context of Thelema, upon taking that leap, you're suddenly going to be in a very different situation than you were before. You will be subject to your karma and to forces, so the theory says, that you may have been able to avoid up until that point. And these things are not so important for the sake of this talk, but this is why we have these warnings and why we're doing our best from the beginning, before AA, before Thelema, outside of Thelema, in our lives, to understand our karma, and to utilize our understanding to have a way of living, to work towards certain goals, and whatever that we find to be true or not true in our lives and in our practices. And a few more quotes from Liber Thesaurb. We see Crowley again emphasizing the importance. It is of such importance to the exempt adept, we cannot overrate it. Let him nowise plunge into the abyss until he's accomplished this, the past life regression, to his most perfect satisfaction. And so this is the warning I was talking about, because for in the abyss, no effort is anywise possible. You're being pushed by your karma, you don't have a choice, but until you are pushed over the edge, or until you make that leap, ideally you will have done enough of the work through a system like this or something else to leap straight and forward and high, rather than to fall on your face and maybe suffer for it, maybe suffer the consequences, the karma, in fact, of the actions that you didn't take the time to deal with. And I can say, and certainly Crowley says, in the abyss, you don't have a choice about dealing with those things. So I would strongly suggest we deal with those parts of ourselves while we have a choice. Isn't it much easier to get to pick the time and the place to deal with some issue you have? Or would you rather be out and about and it hit you all of a sudden? Moving on, briefly, before concluding, two main, I think, perspective takeaways. First, true will, and we've spoken about this already. True will, it's not just what I want, what I feel like. We've said it's a way of being, something very innate for you, but it's very tempting to think we already know this, and who am I to say that any of us do not? In fact, if we look through our lives, we shall see that we've known this part of ourselves, because if there is something so innate in us, it will always be appearing, it will always be fighting to break through all of the things we load up on top of ourselves. All the ideas that we have about ourselves and the world that are in fact contrary to who we really are. But to get to that point and to really trust it when it happens, you frankly need mental and emotional discipline. These are what these systems, this is what the whole point of Thelema is about, is to say, here are the ways, here are the actions we can take to get to this point, and to get to this point armed as best as we can. And similarly, the second is from Vivekananda, which is to not use non-attachment as an excuse. It's very easy to say, I know my true will. It's very easy to say, I'm non-attached. But just as easily, the non-attachment could be... Pardon? It could be an attachment, to the idea of liberating, which it can become an obsession and a hindrance in its own right. It can also be something closer to disattachment. That's how Vivekananda puts it, which is to say, I don't care about anything. And that's hardly the point either. And it's very easy to say, oh, I'm not attached, I don't care about anything. But the reality may not be that... Don't have the good words. The reality may not be so.
Non-attachment is not apathy.
That's exactly what I mean. Thank you. And with reference to this idea that ultimately good karma, doing good, is actually for our own interest, for us to liberate, even if it helps others, if you decide, oh, I'm not attached, or I'm doing the true will, ultimately the only thing you are doing is adding chains of attachment to get in the way of you uncovering your true will or becoming non-attached. We ultimately cheat only ourselves and only add to the time that we have to learn those lessons by pretending otherwise. And when we do in fact discover non-attachment or the true will, then there will be no question. And that's the assurance that you can take, that you'll know and you'll be certain when it happens. So what are our main takeaways here? All actions are karma. In fact, practically speaking, from Crowley's definition of karma, art and science causing change in conformity with will, all willed actions, all willed karma is magic.
Yeah, it says you're bound to do magic whether you try to or not, so you might as well learn to do it well.
And that's exactly the point of this lecture. How can we assess and analyze our karma, our actions, the effects, who we are today and where we would like to be to achieve our goals? It doesn't have to be liberation. Well, it does, but we could never make anyone else choose that as a goal. But ultimately, that goal is there, and ultimately, as I've said, we're all being pushed towards that goal. True will is simply the actions, the karmas, that we are meant to be performing, the way in which we are doing our karma and doing our work, as we approach that idea of perfect work. Ritual magic is very simply, mechanically, just understanding the art and science of using ingredients to get certain outcomes. What kind of cake do I want to bake? Do I want to bake a pie? Strawberry or rhubarb, so on and so forth. All these things are karma, and the study of karma, a study of karma yoga by Vivekananda, will only help you to undertake any action and any objective in your life. And the point, and one of the objectives of thelemic initiation of the AA work, is to get to this point where you have this mastery and you're able to look at least everything that's happened to you in this life, if not past lives. And it'll be up to you at that point to determine what those past lives mean, or if anything happens at all. But we say in the higher initiations, you can understand yourself, you can understand how you got here, and ideally, you can use that knowledge to build a type of ethics, to build a framework internally to help you get to wherever you want to go. And with that, love is the law, love under will.
Thanks for listening. Find Toronto Thelema online. Like, comment, share, and subscribe, and help us grow. And join us again in the darkly splendid abodes.